Welcome to Ask Gwen, everyone. As you know, I have cerebral palsy, CP, a.k.a. CP for short. I have ataxia, spastic, cerebral palsy. That's just what I've been given. I was given that 31 years ago. I was not born able-bodied. But the reason why I say that statement is, yes, it has something to do with today's episode. I found my guest today by listening to another podcast called Lipson's The Feed, which is how we host this podcast and how my guest hosts his podcast. So they do promos on The Feed, and The Feed is a public podcast, of course it is, and so I found my guest today via another podcast, and one of Bill's strengths is actually peeling a banana with one hand, which the reason why I'm laughing is because I can't even peel a banana with two hands, so I'm like, okay, Bill, you have to come on and explain to my listeners your story and your new diagnosis of having a stroke. So I'm going to let Bill take it away.
All right. Thank you very much for having me on the show. Yeah, it is very interesting. I went through through life primarily able-bodied up until June 3rd, 2017. I went to bed the night before and woke up at 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning, which I never do, and thought I had slept on my arm funny because it just felt a little weird. And then I got up to use the bathroom, and my arm didn't start waking up. And then my legs started to sort of go offline as well. Took a look in the mirror, and my face didn't look quite right, so I thought, I think I might be having a stroke at age 46. Woke up my girlfriend and had her call an ambulance and spent the next month in the hospital dealing with this. Basically, what happened is I broke my basal ganglia, which is the part of the brain that sort of controls movement in the body. You know, for those of you who are into computer technology, I like to describe it as it's sort of where the Windows drivers are for the rest of the body. And so suddenly, my brain could no longer communicate with the limbs on my left side. And I had to, I had a blood clot form in there, and it sort of continued to lose functionality throughout that day. Bottomed out around 3 o'clock that afternoon, and then spent the next month in rehab and recovery and trying to do things like learn how to walk again and sort of start to get some control over my arm again and try and just keep the left arm from falling out of the left shoulder, and discovered that the shoulder is just incredibly badly designed. That sort of began my journey and got home, and it's like, okay, so now how do I go ahead and manage life like this? I've been continuing to sort of do the work and get some functionality back and sort of rewire my brain around that damaged chunk. So I can walk around with a cane now, and I can sort of hold on to things with my left hand thanks to some of the spasticity and tone that I have in there. And I just, of course, can't open that hand and let things go yet. But yes, that's some of the things that I am sort of going through and working on there and learning all sorts of things. I have learned way more about neurology and neuroplasticity in the past year than any marketing guy should ever know. And starting to understand things that, you know, the way we use words in language is, you know, is just not accurate in many cases. For example, a lot of folks like to think of getting – they go to the gym, they do their workout so they can get their muscles all toned and be really toned for the summer and thinking that that just means your muscles look cool. But in reality, what tone is in a muscle is basically that muscle going ahead and contracting all the time, sort of like we think of as flexing. And that sort of makes an arm just not really usable as for many things, as it just sort of permanently clenches itself. So that's sort of some of those things I've been dealing with, figuring out how do I manage life one-handed and learning all sorts of new things about that. Of course, as I went through this, since I was already a podcaster, my natural reaction was to, well, now it's time to go ahead and start another podcast and talk about all of this stuff and figure out how to share
story.
Yeah. Yeah, and share the stories of other folks as well, because stroke is happening to more and more younger people these days. And the researchers aren't entirely sure why. There's some lifestyle changes which are probably having an impact on that. But more and more Generation X and Millennial folks are dealing with stroke. And it's not just something that happens to your grandparents when they turn 80. It's happening to more and more folks. And as folks have a stroke, it doesn't mean life is over. It means your life has changed. And now you got to figure out what you do with that and where you go from here.
Yes. Yes. And the reason why I got silenced for 2 minutes is because you sound like me on my left side. You sound exactly like me. I cannot control my left hand to spend a life I wish I could, but I can't due to CP, due to cerebral palsy, but I make the best of it. And you seem to make the best of it, too, and that's how we carry on. And so,
Absolutely. Okay,
my first question to you is, now I'm going to sound like a complete idiot, and I'll put this caveat before it. What are the signs of a stroke? Because I've had personal experience with a brain, slow leaking brain aneurysm. That is what my mom had. And so I've had personal experience with a slow leaking brain aneurysm, but never with someone with a stroke. And if someone were to wake up and they didn't have the help of an incredible caregiver like you did, on that day, your girlfriend, let's just say that, how could they tell if they're having a stroke? Or do you just have to be conscious of it?
Well, there are two words I want everybody to remember, and that is be fast, B-E-F-A-S-T. That's sort of the most important thing to keep in mind about stroke. And those letters in that phrase, be fast, stand for, first, the B is for balance. So if you find yourself walking or going around and suddenly your balance has changed for the negative, that is probably a bad sign. You may also find that you have trouble just, you know, sort of even sitting up. You may start slouching off to one side in a way that's not normal for you. The E stands for eyes. So if your vision suddenly changes and you suddenly lose sight out of one eye, or if you suddenly find yourself losing the left view or the right view out of both eyes, that is also a sign. The F stands for fat, for face. So if you find that your face is starting to droop on one side or you can't stick your tongue out straight, that is another indication. A is for arms. So if you try to hold your arms out straight and you find you can't lift one arm, then that is another sign. S is for speech. So if you suddenly find yourself slurring your speech or having trouble accessing your words and accessing language, that is another possible sign. And T is for time. Time is so critical. So if any of this stuff starts happening, you or somebody near you needs to call 911 or whatever your local emergency number is and get to the hospital as quickly as possible. And here's the thing. Every stroke is different. You may or may not have all of those symptoms. You may only have a couple of them, depending on the stroke. But don't worry about making a mistake. Don't worry about a false alarm. When in doubt, go ahead and call 911 and let the medical professional make that call. And be sure to tell them that you think you may be having a stroke, especially if you're younger, because they may not realize that they may just assume that a younger person is probably not having that. And once the EMTs get there, then they can provide that care. Time is critical for a number of reasons. First of all, especially if you're by yourself, you may not have a lot of time. You may if you wait a half hour or an hour, you may not be able to operate your phone. You may not even know how to use a phone as time goes by. The other thing is that if you get to a comprehensive stroke center quickly, within 4 to 6 hours of the onset of symptoms, they can use a special drug called TPA, where if your stroke is caused by a brain clot, which is different from the kind that your mother had, but if your stroke is caused by a brain clot, this drug can actually go ahead and break that clot up and minimize the damage. Within 24 hours of the onset of
Let me jump in here. My mother wasn't even diagnosed, and this is going to make me so angry. The hospital, because they went treat it, they went trained, and they didn't know how to spot a brain aneurysm when on a stroke. They gave her a bag of fluids, sent her home, and then her sister basically found her with her eyes rolling back in her head. And, yeah, that's what started the month from hell. So, basically, they missed it entirely, which the reason why I bring that up is because I live in a rural area, and a lot of my listeners, some live in a rural area, a lot of my listeners live in big cities. But if you live in a rural area and you don't have the time to get to a neurological center to cure this stroke, then what? Because if once you medevac a person out, you still have the chance of them losing consciousness on that medevac flight. I mean, I remember asking my mom after they caught it, the brain aneurysm that she had. I said, how much memory do you remember that medevac flight? She goes, a little. So now what I'm wondering is, okay, you had the stroke, you're out in the boonies, what do we do now?
You know, all you can really do is get to a hospital of some sort as quickly as possible, because there is some conventional wisdom that says that if you're having a stroke, you should take aspirin to help break up a clot, which could solve your problem. But the problem is you have no way of knowing if your stroke is being caused by a clot or by a bleed. And if it's caused by a bleed, taking aspirin is the absolute worst thing you can do. You know, it's a problem where you're, you know, what they're ultimately going to have to do when you get to a hospital someplace is they're going to do a CT scan or they're going to do an MRI, and that is really going to determine where they go from there. Now, fortunately, if it is a clot and maybe you miss that 4 to 6 hour window, the American Heart Association released new guidelines early this year that now recommend within 24 hours of the onset of symptoms, there's a treatment called a thrombectomy, where they can actually run a cable up through your thigh and go ahead and remove the clot in some cases. So that is a newer change. And pretty much most if you can get into the medical system in this country, even if you're in a small town hospital, you can be at a place that can provide this service within 24 hours, barring some places like the boonies of Alaska and some things like that. But, you know, that being said, I did not get – I was not eligible for any of those treatments because I woke up with my symptoms. So there was no way of telling, did this happen when I woke up or did it happen sometime in the middle of the night and was I already outside that window of treatment? So that moved on to trying to just not make things worse, getting treated in the hospital for that, and then focusing on, okay, here's where we are. Where do we go from here? We've now focused on recovery and working around that damage. And the specific damage and what's going to go wrong is going to vary so much from person to person that there really isn't a simple what is going to happen to you when you have a stroke. Until that happens, they can't really tell. Now, one of the other things that the doctors used to say is that your recovery, what you get in the first 6 months is all you're going to get. What we've come to learn, especially since the early 2000s, is that that is nonsense. You can continue to recover for years or decades afterwards. Most of your recovery will happen in that first 3 to 6 months. That's where you can make some of the fastest progress. But after that, you can absolutely still recover. And, you know, I still find that now I'm starting to get, you know, some control over twitching my fingers a little bit. Not a lot of practical use yet, but some of that stuff can come back. But it's going to take work and it's going to take time. Getting to the hospital as quickly as possible is, you know, the best way to save your life and minimize the damage. It's not going to eliminate everything, but it can make the difference between spending a month in the hospital and getting out and having to, you know, wear a leg brace and an arm brace and use a cane versus spending 4 to 5 days in the hospital and 6 months later running a 5K.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you need to catch these things in the nick of time. And, of course, for me, my local hospital, which is the same local hospital that my mom went to, they didn't necessarily catch CT either. They didn't necessarily catch my CP either. The, her OBGYN came to the house and, he said, you have Braxton Hicks. Her girlfriend came over and said, no, you don't have Braxton Hicks. You're going into preterm labor. And then her second OBGYN saved me. So basically, me fighting with the medical system started day one. And so that's why I ask if you're stuck in the rural area, how long do they have until they can get you to a bigger hospital like Swedish Medical Center, which you went to in Seattle. My mom went to out here. I believe Swedish is all across this country. My mom went to it for brain aneurysm, but you went to it for the stroke care. And what I saw coming out of Swedish is now I saw less of the rehab than you did, but I saw amazing rehab. The rehab they did with my mom, the little bit of rehab they did before she got meningitis, was amazing. And so, yeah. And so if you can get to those big hospitals, you're better off than the small boomy hospitals. Now, Phil, are you still working now? Are you a full-time patient of a stroke? Like, I like to call myself a full-time patient of cerebral palsy. Or are you still working the 9-to-5? Or what's the deal?
Well, I am doing some freelance work, and I am also still looking for full-time employment as well. I was already out of work at the time of my stroke. I had been out of work for 9 months, and, you know, one of the best investments I ever made in my entire life was paying my COBRA insurance premium, which, you know, meant I had great health insurance when I was in the hospital and really had to use it. What's interesting is that my disabilities, my deficits, really don't impact the core of my core job skills, which is as a corporate trainer and a speaker and a brand evangelist. I really don't need both hands to do that. I really don't need to be able to run or jog. And really, I was never very athletic to begin with. You know, if a company were to hire me to be on their softball team now, I probably wouldn't be any less effective than I was before the stroke.
Yes. Yes. Let's face it. Some of us have athletic genes. Others do not. I have athletic genes, but I do not just because of my CT. So, nice segue there, Bill. You said it beautifully. I probably would be less effective on a softball team to begin with, even without a stroke or kidney aside. So what is your best advice for caregivers? What is your best advice for caregivers? Because I know you mentioned in your stroke cast that you have the best caregiver on the planet, and I happen to have the best caregiver on the planet myself, my dad. I still live with him, so that's just to place a caveat there. But what would be your best advice for all caregivers, especially people that are caregiving stroke victims?
Absolutely. First of all, it's catch your breath, take your time, and take time for yourself. Especially early on, when stroke happens, your life gets turned upside down at a moment's notice. You don't have time to prepare for it or to get used to it, and everything in your life can change when your partner or the person you're caring for has suddenly had a stroke. Maybe they were managing finances, maybe they were managing the household, maybe they were just doing other stuff that they're not going to be able to do in the short term, and maybe not in the long term. So you're dealing with a lot of stress, and you're trying to coordinate this stuff. And, you know, if it's somebody you're very emotionally connected to, you're worried, are they going to live? What's going to happen? So at some point, you have to stop. You have to catch your breath. You have to take care of yourself, because as a caregiver, if you are too tired and too stressed out and you're just finding yourself mentally frayed from dealing with all of this and worrying about all of this and trying to figure out where this is going to go. And once you get into that sort of spiral and all stressed out, you're really not going to be able to help the person you're caring for. You have to take that time for yourself. Secondly, make sure you get the training that you need. If you are going to be working with somebody who has physical deficits, make sure you're getting the training you need to help them transfer from the bed to the wheelchair to the toilet to the couch to whatever transfers you have to do to make sure that you can help them manage that safely so you don't injure yourself trying to care for somebody else. Because, again, if you get injured, you can't help them. So reach out and get that training. The other thing is make sure you find other caregivers and you connect with them and you share your experience with them and you listen to them and talk with them and figure out how caregivers can all support one another. We have I lead the Young Adult Stroke Survivors Group here in Seattle. It's the largest survivor-led group supporting stroke in the area. And one thing we do with each of our meetings is we have a separate breakout each month specifically for the caregivers so they can get a chance to step away from their stroke survivor partner or the person they're caring for, go into a separate room and just really talk about their stuff with other people providing care and give them a chance. I don't know what they do in that other room. Maybe it just gives them a chance to go complain about us, which is fine. They need that.
Yeah, which is fine. Let's just say a little complaining is fine. But I applaud my dad for doing this. He hired my mom, and not so much. My mom hired AIDS at the end for me. Ended her life to me, not, I wish she did it many, many years ago, so that we wouldn't have as many fights as we did, but maybe that's just the mother-daughter relationship. But my dad made the conscious decision to hire AIDS right from the get-go, and because I'm a woman. Let's face it. And he tried to caregive me for about, a good 2 months. And he goes, I give up. I would rather pay someone to come in and help you. I would rather pay someone and then I'll deal with you the rest of the day. As long as you're dressed and happy, I can feed you. I can do whatever you need me to do. I would rather just pay someone to come in and help you. So that's how he did it. And I wish my mom came up with that idea, but my dad came up with that idea. So that's why I said, what's the best advice for caregivers aspect? Because caregiving is a lot of work. Caregiving is a lot of work. And my dad, I was lucky enough where my dad was in the financial position to retire. And so he retired. I also am getting a trust fund here in the next couple months. So that is going to make life a lot easier. So for those of us. But I just want to put a spotlight on the wonderful caregivers that we have. And I know these colleges now have nursing programs and CNA programs. I don't know about the community college in Seattle, but I know that the community college in Colorado Mountains College, they have a fantastic nursing program. And one of the things I was going to mention to you guys is getting a student in here with in a caregiving situation would probably help the primary caregiver. Bill, how do you feel about that? Do you like student CNAs? I mean, I know it's broken completely different than cerebral palsy, but if work comes to worse, getting a student in a situation might be good on the main caregiver.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to go ahead and know where your limits are and where you're going to go. And, you know, when it comes to bringing in a student who can help out, who's got the appropriate training, absolutely. It can definitely be a great solution. Now, what I would caution folks about is that if you're going to do that, I would probably suggest most folks actually go through a separate program that would hire them as the care, as the aide to come in, because if you just go ahead and, you know, you theoretically you could do it just like when you bring in somebody to care for your kids, like a nanny situation or something like that. But especially when you're caring for somebody with disabilities, there are all sorts of other insurance considerations. For example, if, you know, you were to just hire a student out of college yourself and they got hurt, help in your home, you can really be subject to some liabilities. That's something to be cautious about. You also want to work with an organization. So you want to work with an organization that will take care of that, that will manage all of those taxes as appropriate, and that will also go ahead and vet the person and make sure that they are safe to provide that care. Make sure that they are do the appropriate background checks and you know, and are able to clear all of that. Because one of the challenges that many folks with disabilities face is that they are often subject to abuse, even whether that is going to be physical, mental, or sexual abuse. It happens at a much higher rate to those with disabilities than to folks without, and it's not often talked about. And when you're working with somebody who is recovering from a stroke, who may also have challenges with aphasia, being able to speak, being able to communicate, or have other cognitive challenges that can come along, then it's a lot harder for them to necessarily speak up if something's going wrong. So if you're going to bring somebody else into your home, work with an organization that vets people appropriately. You can get recommendations probably from a hospital where you are being discharged, or from your doctor's office, or any of those other places, and start working that way rather than just going ahead and hiring somebody you don't know on your own and trying to make sure that everybody gets taken care of in the most appropriate way. Because now is not the time to go ahead and introduce additional risks that you really don't have to introduce. But definitely, there's absolutely nothing wrong with getting somebody in to provide that extra care, outsource some of that other stuff. And really, even if you're not necessarily bringing in somebody to provide medical assistance for a survivor itself, sometimes it can make all the difference for a caregiver to just bring in a cleaning service, somebody else who can take over those household chores to free you up from doing that. Because oftentimes when you suddenly find yourself in a caregiving context, all the other stuff around the home, that stuff still needs to get done. So sometimes maybe the simplest thing is just bringing in somebody else to take care of that stuff for you.
Yes. Now I'm going to explain my situation just a little bit, because Bill brought up a good point, and now Bill, you taught me a lesson on not necessarily to use care.com, which I did. And now I luckily found a great person that couldn't hurt a fly. She wouldn't hurt a fly. She knows better than that. But unfortunately, you taught me a lesson publicly that now I have to look into for my age. And I'll look into that in the next couple months and years. And because Bill taught me a lesson publicly, he didn't realize he was teaching me a lesson publicly, but he did. So now I have to look into the appropriate accoutrement for my age just to make sure we're all safe and happy and healthy. Yeah. But what we do in this house is my aide comes in for, I actually have two aides, one that comes in on the weekend and then one that comes in during the week. And the one aide is a housekeeper. She deals with me for 1 hour, in the morning, starting at 9, let's say 9, actually, that's not true. 9 to 9:30, she deals with me. 10 o'clock, she starts cleaning. The other one comes and only helps me on Tuesdays and the weekends, starting at 9 or 9:30. And so that's how we do it. And I tried to use the healthcare system. The healthcare system didn't work for me. So finding these private duty caregivers would help. So that's how I do it. I know that Bill has support too. I mean, to peel a banana with one hand, you have to have support. I'm laughing at that because I can't even peel a banana with two hands, which I said at the top of the sprinkle. So I know that.
Plus, bananas are just inherently funny fruit.
Oh, Bill. Bill. Where are we going? Okay. So that's why Bill and I need help. And we try and have a positive attitude about this because, let's face it, we're walking like we're nuts. I look like I'm half drunk even when I haven't had a glass of wine. And yes, I do drink wine because I'm not on any medications for cerebral palsy. I'll admit that publicly on the podcast. The only thing I'm taking is vitamin D. And so I look like I'm half drunk. And Bill with his cane probably looks like he probably scares people too when he walks into a room. I don't know if he does or he doesn't. Bill, do you scare people when you walk into a room?
What's interesting is there are several different reactions I get from people. Some people just get nervous about me, wondering if I'm going to fall over on them. Some people decide that they are going to be very smiley and supportive to sort of demonstrate almost like how supportive they are of folks with disabilities. And the other thing I have found is that when I'm walking around the streets of Seattle, the homeless and the folks who are out on the street, living on the street and whatnot, are just awesome to me. They, you know, that was one of the things I was initially worried about once I was going out walking with the disability, is that now I am more vulnerable and I could potentially have more problems. But what I have found is that folks who are down on their luck are now, you know, they're going to smile at me. They're going to nod at me. They're going to be like, hey, how you doing? And just a lot friendlier than before I had the disability. At one point, I got a disabled person discount from a homeless guy. I was walking down the street, and he's looking, and he's saying to everybody who's passing by, hey, can you give me a quarter? Can you give me a quarter? Can you give me a quarter? I walk past him. He goes, hey, can you give me a dime?
And Exactly. Now, my next question is, you don't happen to have a favorite outdoor activity, because I know I just got an e-bike, by the way. You guys, so this is why I'm asking this question. And I know Seattle, because I read it somewhere, Seattle has a huge e-bike population, and you guys can see that e-bike on my Instagram. I didn't take it out today because it rained, but probably tomorrow I'll take it out. And so you don't have any favorite outdoor activity, do you?
You know, my main outdoor activity, I like to, you know, sort of go out and, you know, spend time walking around. I play a lot of Pokemon Go, going out there and playing that on my phone and going to the different parks and whatnot in the area. But generally what I like to do when I go out is often just, you know, sort of go to a coffee shop and read or pull out the computer and work on stuff there or work on writing. I like being able to just sort of sit outside and soak that up. One of the highlights of my day when I was in the hospital was most days in between therapy appointments, I would just get wheeled down to the Starbucks in the lobby and then get some coffee and then go sit outside. And even if that's just to sort of sit there and break up the monotony of the day and sort of soak up, you know, the little bits of sunlight, that are there. Yeah. And of course in Seattle, we only get about 4 months of sunlight and the rest of the year is just sort of perpetual drizzle.
I was just going to say that, no, I'm looking out the window right now as I say this, and it looks like Seattle with a right now as I record this podcast with you. I'm thinking, how perfect we record this podcast on a drizzly, rainy August day, and so I'm like, no bad chance I'm getting out on a bicycle today. Me and a wet e-bike, not happening. But, yeah. Okay. And so before I let you go back to doing amazing awareness work, awareness work with the folks cast, and I want to know, do you have a couple of questions for me?
Sure. Sure. So I guess the first thing I would ask is, do you have any particular life hacks you use for making life a little bit easier working through your disabilities?
I won't call it a life hack. I use Siri. I use Apple's Siri dictation. I guess you can call them life hacks for every single little thing I do on my iPhone. I now have a PC, which that's another long story in itself. I want my Mac back because Siri is the best thing since sliced bread. And so that's a life hack that I use. And taking online classes is another life hack. I go back to school. I go back to journalism school tomorrow, which that's been an interesting journey in itself. Earning a associate's degree with a disability, but yes, I am doing it, and I plan to end up with a master's in fine arts with an emphasis in writing. Yes, I will be a doctor eventually after I get this associate's degree, but online classes are the best life hack I can ever imagine. And then I use email a lot and Siri, and I just do all this through my phone and my PC, and I am hopefully going to get a Mac soon so my phone can talk to my computer.
Well, that is fantastic. It's really amazing what technology in general lets folks do these days, and for folks managing with disabilities, it's really just such a godsend for what you can do now and the things that we can do with, you know, the Amazon Echo device and the Google Home devices and Siri and Cortana and all of these other tools. You know, one of the things I was thinking about after I was like 2 or 3 months out of the hospital, and I was riding in an Uber while tracking a package that was arriving via Amazon Prime on my phone. And I remember thinking while I was in that car, boy, being disabled must have really sucked 15 years ago.
yes. I am lucky that I am an older millennial. And I was born in 87, and I am lucky that I had all the medical interventions that I had back then and still do. So I can't imagine being diagnosed with CP now or being diagnosed with a stroke now, how the medical interventions, the speech technology could help all of us. I mean, Siri used 1,000 times a day by able-bodied people, but for the disabled, Siri's my discipline, and I admit that.
Well, that's one of the things that's also really interesting that, you know, I kind of knew before all this happened, but now it really starts to resonate more with you, is that looking at the world through an accessibility lens, a lot of the things that are more along the lines of accessibility products are really just awesome design. And if you make something more accessible for those with disabilities, you make the experience better for folks without disabilities as well. And that's everything from ramps leading up to a door. I remember hauling gear for work, into buildings and just being able to hit that automatic door opener button that makes things so much easier. The handles that are replacing doorknobs now in new design, many folks don't realize that those sort of start out as an aid for those with disabilities who have issues with manual dexterity, and it becomes so much easier for folks without disabilities as well, who can now open a door with their elbow and just do all of these other things. You know, I've come to realize, other things that are out there too. Like, I always used to hate, the sort of blow dryers in the bathroom for drying your hands. And, why didn't more places use paper towels? Well, it turns out that when you have the use of only one hand, it's really difficult to dry your hands with a paper towel.
Yes.
And
yes,
having more
exactly.
of these options are so much more important.
Yeah, that's so much more important. You and I could do a disabled podcast like there's no tomorrow. You and I and a bunch of my networks could do a disabled podcast. In fact, you guys, I'm actually helping launch a disabled podcast. A mother and daughter team are doing it. I'm just behind the scenes. I'm not going to be the face of this one. I let them do the work, and I just do the magical upload and coaching and cheerleading. So that podcast is going to be called The Shining Beautiful, and it's based on a book, which the book is on Amazon, and it's called The Shining Beautiful series. And the daughter has cerebral palsy. She was adopted from, I'm about to say, Korea, and her mom, who's the saint of all saints, took this child in, and she wasn't even diagnosed with CP at the time until she got here, and then they diagnosed her with CP. And so now they're turning their book into a podcast, and yours truly is helping with that. So
awesome.
We're going to be looking at the how to make communities better for the disabled. The daughter is going to be interviewing her team. The mother's going to be interviewing the people that help people with disabilities. I'm going to be on this podcast. They've already said, well, yes, you need to be on this podcast because you're the inspiration behind this podcast. So I said,
awesome.
Sure. And so we're going to be looking at a brighter future for people with disabilities. So along with the stroke cast, when Shining Beautiful comes out, I think you guys should subscribe to that because we need to make this world a better place for people with disabilities, so Bill and I don't get so frustrated. And Bill, as we tie up this interview, what would be your piece of advice for the able-bodied individual who's probably running, listening to this podcast, and let's just say who probably has tears in their eyes right now listening to us speak, and what would be your advice to the able-bodied person who may not understand disabilities or stroke or cerebral palsy, what would be your advice?
My advice would be to listen to folks and ask honest questions. Be aware of what other folks may be dealing with and just from an open-minded perspective. And the other thing to keep in mind is that, you know, when you are going to, when you see somebody who's disabled or has disabilities and you think they might need help, don't just help them. Offer to help them. And if they say no, respect that because, you know, often that can be important. And what I tell everybody as well is to also think about my favorite word when you look at your own limitations. Because even if we don't have physical disabilities, we all have limitations that we try to work through on our day-to-day lives. And my favorite word is the word yet. Because I talk about things like, I can't run yet. I can't use my hand yet. I can't, you know, there are a lot of things that I can't do yet. And whenever you look at something in your life that you think, I want to be able to do this, but I can't do it, don't stop at I can't do it. Add that yet and acknowledge the reality of today, but make plans to make things better tomorrow.
Well, that's beautiful. And how you said it, you took the words right out of my mouth. And please, 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 this is my PSA. When you see a person walking with a disability, especially at a farmer's market, I'm going single up a farmer's market there because this happened to me. Make sure you say "excuse me" loud enough so that people would move out of your way, because 9 times out of 10 they're standing there and you're coming through. I haven't been through on my bike, which, yes, I have, on my old bike. Yeah, I did do this, and they would just stand in my way. So make sure you just move out of the disabled person's way, and Bill's laughing at me because he knows the truth. He doesn't want to
You can probably move out of our way a lot faster than we can get out of yours.
Yes, yes. He and I don't want to get trampled by you guys. Just move and just open your eyes and look, you guys. Look around. And if you see a person in a wheelchair, ask, how can I help you? 9 times out of 10, we'll say no. If you can grab a dollar for a person, you make my day a little bit easier. You make Bill's day a little bit easier. And Bill is absolutely right. We can't move quick enough to move out of your way, so move out of ours. That is my public service announcement. And you guys can take it or leave it. But please, just be conscious of the disabled. Please just be conscious of the disabled. And I don't care how long I've been. Well, you guys are still going to ask me questions about that one. And that being said, where can people find you, Bill, and where can people find the stroke cast or your 2-minute talk cast, which is your podcast for the stroke? And because, Bill, you are a motivational speaker with and without a stroke. And so where can people find you?
Well, thank you very much. You can find me on Twitter, where I am at currentlybill. You can also find the StrokeCast simply at StrokeCast.com. You can also find us on Facebook at StrokeCast. And you can find the podcast wherever you get wherever you listen to podcasts, whether that is going to be through the iTunes, the Apple Podcast Store, whether that's going to be through Google Podcasts, whatever other podcast app you have out there, or even through the Amazon Echo device. You can also find 2-Minute Talk Tips over at 2MinuteTalkTips.com. So StrokeCast.com, 2MinuteTalkTips.com, and @CurrentlyBill are the best ways to get a hold of me.
Yes, and don't ask Bill about killing the banana. He's got a genius story on the stroke test, which I almost laughed out loud at about killing the banana. So go listen to his story about his stroke and just carry on. And please, 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 as I said, just be conscious of the disabled people. Just be conscious of us and believe in our gifts and our abilities. And, oh, another thing. I will be running around like a crazy woman in the next couple of weeks because I go back to a day job on the 21st and low-paying day job. I shouldn't be complaining, though. It's still a day job, but it's still low-paying due to I teach, and teachers will never get paid high enough. And
sure.
So just bear with me as I run around like a crazy woman, and I'm actually transferring jobs within my job right now. I have a job, but without a job description, that will be changed on the 21st of September. So just bear with me as I welcome myself back to my day job, and the podcast will still go on as planned, unless something extraordinary happens, when I go back to journalism school starting tomorrow. So I will keep you guys updated on the day job, and I hope you enjoyed this fun-filled disability awareness podcast with Bill and myself, and I'm sorry that I made disabled awareness, but look, I have to promote other disabilities other than the cerebral palsy, and I hope you guys enjoy another fabulous episode of Ask When. And if you guys are running on these trails and you want more information, all Bill's information can be found in the show notes. And I will see you guys later. And bye, you guys.
Okay, awesome.